We welcome in our good friend John Hoven from Mayor's Manor to help us take a little bit of a closer look at the new old division rival, the Kings. Mr. Hoven, it's Pat Steinberg and Will Nault. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, yes. Let's get back to it. Some old Smythe division rivals. It's about time.
Well, welcome back to the Pacific. It feels right again.
We did miss you.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. I was tired of seeing those other teams last year. You know, we appreciated being back for the 56-game season and having hockey and whatnot, but it's going to be great to have the fans back in the buildings, and it'll be great to renew some of those rivalries. And as you said, I think Calgary and L.A. have something brewing.
Do you get the sense from who you speak to with this Kings team? Because we talk a lot here about, well, the good thing for the Flames and a really positive thing for them getting back to the playoffs is that they're playing in a fairly mediocre division. Do you get the sense that the Kings are looking at this division as really wide open and a good chance for them to get back to the postseason?
Well, I think what you said is true. It is a mediocre division. There's no doubt about it. But I wouldn't say necessarily that people connected to the Kings are pointing to that as the reason why they think that, you know, they should be in contention for a playoff spot. They might be thinking it, but really what they're talking about and what they're more focused on is the improvements that the team has made. They think that they really made some significant improvements in going out and adding Edler, a veteran defenseman, to the group, somebody that they think is going to provide better balance to their three defensive pairs. And then probably more important to that, they were really insistent upon going out over the summer and getting two, top nine, middle six, if you will, forwards, one a center and one a winger. And so by adding Deneau, they really like the fact that that's going to take some pressure off of their younger centers, guys like Gabe Vilardi, guys like Quentin Byfield, and, you know, adding in Arvidsson from Nashville, a player that they think should be able to play up on the top line with Kopitar, which is, you know, going to potentially provide some more offensive punch to a team that really needs more goals. And so they think that on paper, the team is much more improved than where they were a year ago. And they think that, all the talk about a rebuild is kind of behind them. And from this point forward, it should be an ascension each and every year over the next couple of years.
Well, and I know I've read a number of different articles about and talked to different people with the Kings. And you know, you've got Anze Kopitar still signed on a big deal and 34 years old. You've got Drew Doughty still signed for a number of years and a big deal, 31 years old. And it's kind of like if you're going to have those guys and if you're going to stick with Kopitar and Doughty going forward, there's really no point in rebuilding, right? You might as well try to get the most out of them while they're still there. If you're going to rebuild, you'd probably start to look at moving away from those two guys, would you not?
Well, it's an interesting comment because they did have to rebuild. They did have to tear it down. And where most teams during a rebuild, you know, it's sort of painting with a broad brush here, most teams would look to get rid of all of the older, more expensive talent. The Kings kind of went a different route. They looked at their middle talent when you talk about from an age distribution perspective, and they said, hey, it's that middle talent that's probably going to give us the greatest return from an asset perspective. And so trading away Tyler Toffoli and Jake Muzzin and guys like that, that's where they're going to be able to get some key assets, get some first-round picks back, get some second-round picks, get some prospects, the Tyler Madden deal, what they made with Vancouver, that would strengthen, you know, an already strong prospect pool with yet another potential forward who has good bloodlines with his father, of course, being a former Stanley Cup champion with the New Jersey Devils. So they went that route, and they felt that building around the core four, as they called them, which would – have been Quick, Brown, Kopitar, and Doughty, they felt that that was the way to go. Now, the challenge that it created for them is that over the last two or three years, as they tore it down, they ended up with an age distribution that was at the far ends of each spectrum. You had the older veteran players that were, you know, let's call them 35-ish, and then on the far other end of the spectrum was the remainder of the roster, the really young kids. And so that, again, was one of the reasons that they did what they did over the summer, is they needed to fill in that middle. So guys like Alex Iafallo, who they signed as an unrestricted free agent coming out of college, he sort of had earned his place there in the middle. Guys like Matt Roy, seventh-round defenseman, he had earned his place there in the middle. But adding a Deneau and adding an Arvidsson, it gives them more players in that sort of middle age group, guys that they can grow with over the next couple years, and that eventually you will see some of their younger prospects, Turcotte, Byfield, Kaliev, et cetera, probably right, even leapfrog those guys into, you know, more important roles. But for the time being, for the short term, they needed players that could do it now. You know, for as great as Turcotte, et cetera, might be, they're a couple years away from really making significant impacts in the National Hockey League. So they needed players that could allow them to win games this season, and that's what they feel that they have in Danault and Arvidsson.
That being said, the list might only be the one guy, but John, how do you view the chances of Quentin Byfield being on this team in October?
I would say coming out of the gate, his chances aren't very good. And the reason I say that has nothing to do with his particular skill level or where he's at from a development standpoint. It just is a numbers crunch. And this is where sometimes I think that fans get overly excited and just think about individual players, just like they do with trades, and they're not really looking at the bigger picture. You only have 23 guys on the roster. And when you look at the number of contracts that the Kings already have, they're probably going to have to put anywhere from 3 to 5 players on waivers to prepare for the opening night roster. So you're potentially giving away some free assets. Now, you know, we could have a whole hour-long debate about, well, you know, isn't that really a good thing maybe if some of those players did get picked up on waivers because it allows them to free themselves from a contract and things like that. Sure, that is true, but you don't want to lose all of those players because those are your depth players that you're going, when they don't get claimed, those are your depth players that are going to be down in the American League. And if you have injuries or any sort of other thing that happens throughout the season, you need to call on those players to bring them up. You don't want to be forced into a situation where you're calling up, you know, a 19 or 20-year-old kid, a first-year pro, someone who doesn't have experience, and try to thrust them into a more important role. So it's a very delicate balance. And so from that standpoint, you don't need Quentin Byfield on the opening night roster. It's great if he is, and if he earned that spot in camp, but the kind of safer play would be to let him start the year in the American League. He's a very, very young player. So people want to talk about the fact that he was drafted second overall. The key to it is his age and his experience level. He's still growing into his body. He's still learning how to be a professional. He doesn't even have a full year of professional hockey under his belt. He would have been in the Ontario Hockey League last year. And he would have been even in the Ontario Hockey League this year had it not been for the special rules of the pandemic, much like we saw with Kaliev. So long-winded answer to tell you that it'll be great and fans will be excited if 55 is on the opening night roster, but I have him penciled in starting the year in the American League in Ontario. And if he has a strong first couple of months, you could see Byfield force his way into the NHL in the second half of the season. But I don't think that's the plan on opening night.
He's John Hovind, Mayor's Manor, all things LA Kings here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The big, I guess, acquisition up front, obviously, was Arvidsson via trade, but Philip Deneau signs a big contract with the LA Kings, and the big talking point, at least in Canada, has been, okay, with Deneau signed, that's going to open up paths for Kopitar to be back to, you know, maybe more of an offensive role and not so focused on the defensive side. Do you see the same thing? And if so, is that a great thing for Kopitar now at 34 to really just kind of get back to that offensive game that, you know, we all know he has?
Well, the first thing that I would say has a Calgary tie-in, and that would say, if Daryl Sutter was still the head coach in Los Angeles, I don't think that would happen because I think Daryl would be too tempted to still play Kopitar 40 minutes a night, all in defensive responsibilities, just because that's the type of guy that Daryl is. But, you know, jokes aside, I do think that there is a path for that, and I think that they have the blueprint to do it. Dustin Brown, last season, they moved him away from some of those defensive responsibilities, and that allowed him to open up and free things up offensively. Hell, he led the team in goals last year, and he missed the final 7 or 8 games of the regular season. So I think if they follow that blueprint with Ante Kopitar, you now have a player in Deneau who is defensively responsible, who the coach should be able to gain trust in very quickly during training camp and feel comfortable ratcheting back some of those defensive minutes. And it's just a reality. It's not a knock on Kopitar. Father Time, he does not play favorites. So every player at some point as they get older needs to shift. They need to change, the way they train, the way they approach the game, and also the way that they play and how they're utilized in the game. So I think there are so many benefits to the Deneau signing. Not only what I mentioned earlier about freeing up some of the pressure put on Byfield or Vilardi to hurry up and become the 2C, but also to allow Kopitar, as you said, to focus a little bit more on the offensive game and open him up just a little bit. And the last point I'll just say on Deneau is that people like to bang on the contract and say that the Kings overpaid. I would say two things. Number one, when you're a team that has had the lack of success that LA has had on the ice over the last couple of years, you do have to overpay. The Kings had to overpay to get Rob Scuderi. He ultimately helped them win the Stanley Cup. So I'm not saying Deneau will do that, but that's what you have to do when you are where the Kings are in sort of their, you know, development process, and they have the money, they could afford to do it, in fact, because of the Byfield contract. The Byfield contract is going to be for the next, a minimum of 3, it could be 4 years if he plays less than 10 games this year in the NHL, it'll slide 4 years then at the league minimum of under $1 million. And so you kind of look at it like a goaltending tandem in terms of what is your total goaltending cost on the cap. Look at the Deneau contract for the next 3 years alongside the Byfield contract. That's why you can afford to pay Deneau that money, because you have QB at under $1 million for 3+ years.
Where are we on Drew Doughty now at the age of 31? There's been plenty made on social media about Doughty's decline, but you saw him for 56 last year, and you watch him closer than anyone, John. At this stage, at the age of 31, where is Drew Doughty now in his career? What is he now in his career?
I will gladly argue this point with anybody all day long and twice on Sunday. Drew Doughty is still an elite defenseman in the National Hockey League. You can show me all the advanced statistics and analytics and everything else. And all of that, to me, it's not a justification or rationalizing, but there is context that's important. The LA Kings have not been a very good team for the last couple of years. And Drew Doughty's interest level, like most elite players, is somewhat going to be tied to what's going on around him. There's been a lot of change. That's something that Drew has probably not been very comfortable with. There's been change behind the bench. He was very close with Daryl Sutter, and I've always said Drew was one of the few players that really thrived under that tough love approach. I would even argue that Drew needs that type of tough love, second father figure type of approach as a player. And so he's had to go through a tremendous amount of change. And then there's been the rotation among who his partners have been, et cetera. And now that the stability is coming in there, now that the trust is there with Coach Todd McClellan, now that they've added in some additional players and the team is expected to be better, there isn't a doubt in my mind. I could name the players that I would want as the first pair defensemen if I was a general manager in the NHL on one hand, and probably have fingers left over that I would absolutely have to have, and Drew Doughty is in that. And for people who think that I might be crazy in saying that, I would just say that you're not paying close attention enough to the type of player that Drew Doughty is. He is the ultimate competitor. He is fueled by the desire to be great, and the hatred and all that stuff, the haters, the chirping, it motivates Drew Doughty. And a motivated Drew Doughty, to me, even at his age and the number of games that he's played in the NHL, it's still very scary. He wants to do 3 things before his career is over. He wants to play for the Canadian Olympic team, and he's going to do everything he can to be there. He wants to win another Norris Trophy, and he wants to win another Stanley Cup. And I don't think that there's any reason to believe that Drew Doughty won't achieve all 3 of those goals before he wraps up his career at some point many, many years from now.
There is no question that Jonathan Quick is a legend with the LA Kings, as he was a huge part of those Stanley Cup victories. But now where he is in his career, John, a guy who's played a lot of hockey, we saw it last year. Todd McClellan went to Peterson more than he did Jonathan Quick. How do you view this goaltending tandem heading into an 82-game schedule with a lot of back-to-backs with the Olympic break slated in there in February?
Yeah, it's like the elephant in the room that most fans and most people don't really want to talk about. And you just gave away the secret that most people don't know because they don't look at the numbers. And that is that Cal Peterson actually played more games than Jonathan Quick last year. So people love to ask me, is it going to be a 50-50 split this year? Who's going to play more games? It's like, guys, just look back at what happened last year. Cal Peterson has become the number one goaltender for the LA Kings. And you're going to see in the contract extension that they're going to sign him to here probably pretty shortly, you're going to see that he's going to be paid as one. He's going to be the number one guy in Los Angeles. He was anointed as the next one, really, from the day they signed him as a UFA coming out of college at Notre Dame. So Cal Peterson is the future. In terms of Jonathan Quick, I find it to be a very interesting case, because while I wouldn't say he still has as much game left in him as maybe a Drew Doughty, I do believe that Jonathan Quick could be a starter on another team and still could carry a team deep into the playoffs and go on another cup run. I've been very surprised that a team like Colorado, to be honest with you, hasn't taken a deeper look, or didn't take a deeper look. They've obviously moved on now. But I think Jonathan Quick would have been somebody that a team like that, who really needed a highly competitive, a warrior, a go-to goaltender. And you can look at the injuries and you could say, oh, there are some question marks. There are no doubt about it. There are some question marks. Can he handle the load? But I think in the proper tandem, in the proper situation where you could spell him a little bit more, I think that Jonathan Quick would be more valuable to a competing team than he will be to play, let's say, 40% of the games in Los Angeles. Now, that being said, the Kings are in no hurry to get rid of Jonathan Quick. He's on a favorable contract from a cap perspective and where they are with the cap for the next 2 years. He's under contract this year and next year. His number 32 will go to the rafters at some day. He is a legend in Los Angeles. And you know, he's one of the core four that I mentioned earlier. So I don't think the Kings will be trading him anytime soon. That opportunity to do that probably reached its peak a couple of years ago. And at this point, he now will be the, you know, if you want to call him 1B or you want to call him number two, he will be the other goaltender in Los Angeles, along with Cal Peterson. And believe me when I say Cal could do a lot worse than having Jonathan Quick as his goaltending partner to learn from and to learn under here over the next two seasons.
Speaking of legends in L.A., you mentioned it off the top of this interview. Daryl Sutter is now the head coach of the Calgary Flames. Back in the division, we're going to get back to traveling across the Canada-U.S. border. I'm sure a lot of King fans, speaking of legends at the Staples Center, a lot of Kings fans would like to see Chris Sutter back with Daryl at some point this season.
Well, I'll tell you what, sign me up right now to have Chris Sutter back at every single game. You know, Daryl might be better in Calgary, but we'll take Chris Sutter back in L.A. at any point. You know, it's a funny thing. The fans love Daryl, and yet the media kind of grew tired there over the, you know, towards the end of his run here in Los Angeles. And I'm sure some of the players did as well. He likes to go to the whip like every game is game seven. And, you know, 82 is a long season. But, we miss and love Chris Sutter. He's just such a funny guy. Always great to see him. And, you know, he has such a great memory. There'll be times where I haven't seen him for a long period of time, run into him in an elevator, and, you know, he's always the first one to say hi and how you doing. And he remembers the last time he saw you, and he'll tell you a funny story or whatnot. So it'll be great to see Chris back. And, you know, I think that the ovation for Daryl when he comes back to Los Angeles is going to be pretty tremendous because when all is said and done, forget about the antics and the post-game media scrums and all that stuff and you know, leaving L.A. When all is said and done, he is a true legend in L.A. He took over a team, you know, in December, a team that was somewhat floundering at the time, that had been rumored to be or thought to be a contender for the division and really hadn't gotten off to a great start. And he put that team together over the next couple of months and pushed all the right buttons and took them to that improbable cup run in 2012 and did it again in 2014. And people will forever, because of that, love Daryl Sutter. And I would say he's probably one of the people that I get asked the most questions about, even to this day, about, you know, boy, I wish Sutter was still the coach, or, you know, why did he ever have to leave? I mean, people still love Daryl Sutter, and so it'll be great to hear him get the recognition that he deserves when he comes back with Calgary this year.
One last one to wrap it up, John, and I just, it's a loaded one, but it may not be the longest answer, because I honestly don't know where this stands. Is Jack Eichel still a possibility for the LA Kings at some point in the next number of weeks or months?
Yeah, is this the point where I hang up early, or we're going to keep going here? Yeah, Jack Eichel has become the new persona non grata. I put a ban on talking about Kovalchuk at one point on the podcast and in radio interviews, just because it became ridiculous to have to answer Kovalchuk questions over and over again. And in terms of Jack Eichel, look, yeah, you know, the rumors just continue to circulate because people need something to talk about, I guess. So it'll be one of the more intriguing things once the season gets started to kind of put that topic behind us and move on. Is there interest? Would there be interest? Look, the parameters of the deal are going to have to change so dramatically for LA to reengage in that. And when they do, if that does happen, I should say, I think that there will be other teams that are willing to offer more. I think there's a much better fit for him potentially in Anaheim than there would be in LA. You know, would the Kings be interested? Look, if there's a lot of ifs connected to that. If Jack Eichel is healthy, he absolutely is a solid addition, and you could do a lot worse than going Kopitar, Eichel, and Deneau down the middle. At the same time, there are so many ifs. The ifs of the health is just one thing. You know, his demeanor, his attitude, his approach, his relationship with his teammates, and how would he fit into a locker room that's going to have a lot of young players in it over the next couple years, and their character of those players, you know, is going to be groomed by guys like Kopitar and Brown and Doughty, guys of historically been pretty high character guys. How does Jack mix into all of that? And then you have the contract as well. I mean, look, if the Kings were willing to call Buffalo right now and offer four first round draft picks as a hypothetical to get him, they can't even afford him because they couldn't keep him. They couldn't fit him under the cap right now. The Kings would have to shed about $7.5 to $8 million in cap space just to get him. So there are so many pieces to this puzzle that make it highly improbable, I think that ship has pretty much sailed. When the Kings went out and made the trade for Deneau, and when they made the trade for Arvidsson, or excuse me, when they made the trade for Arvidsson, when they signed Deneau as a free agent, that's kind of the direction that they're going in. And the Kings do have too many prospects. They're flush with prospects. They will be trading some of those assets away, more likely to get a defenseman or a high-scoring winger at this point than I think to add Jack Eichel. And like I said, if you're in Southern California and you're going to buy a Jack Eichel jersey, it might have a D on the front of it because he might be playing in Anaheim long before he plays in L.A.
See, that was much better than you just hanging up on us. I appreciated that answer. thank you, John. Good stuff as always. Awesome to catch up. Welcome back to the Pacific Division. Looking forward to some Flames and Kings games this year.
Anytime, boys. Always good talking to you, and look forward to keeping up throughout the rest of the season.